and welcome to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce, and I've got Deb Alhamza and Adam Garba here in the studio with me today. Things are kind of going a little crazy because I ran out of gas on my way into the studio today, so we're just trying to still get our guests settled in and set up. And in the meantime, this is our Islamophobia show. We're going to break down all of those stereotypes that are causing so much grief for Muslim people in this country on this show, and we've got all that for you. And to just to introduce that topic to you, here's a short clip for you.
In the name of Allah, the most merciful, I love Muhammad Mustafa than the whole wide world. Making partners with Allah is the greatest sin. I shall never ever worship anybody but Him. For my guidance, I recite the Holy Quran. Every day I fast in the month of Ramadan. When I meet my brothers and sisters each day, As-salam alaykum is what I say. From my money I give some to those in need, to be grateful to Allah and to cure my grief. I always follow the Quran and the Prophet's way. Insha'Allah I shall go to Hajj one day. Many messengers came to guide us along, to enjoin what is right and forbid what is wrong. All the prophets that were sent came to preach one thing: there is no other God but the King of Kings. Before I go to sleep, I read the dua. Allahumma bismika amutu ahiya. When I wake up in the morning, I praise Allah. Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillahi alladhi ahyana. I only love for my brother what I love for myself. Only Allah do I worship and ask Him for help. Every day five times must I always pray. I am proud to be a Muslim.
And this is the Muslim show. And now we actually have all of our guests mic'd up and ready to go. Deb's here.
Hi. Welcome, everyone.
And Adam, who is a businessman here in London, Ontario. He owns A&B Print, which is a print shop out on Meadowbrook Drive. And him and his family have been here in London forever, and one of my oldest friends.
Hello.
So this is the Islamophobia show, and it's on Between the Margins, which is a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. And I think this show is both, because we have the human rights aspect and the regular harassment and discrimination of Muslim people. And we have the happily ever after piece, whereby, generally speaking, people are just trying to live their lives every single day, raise their families just like Adam here, and, you know, make a dollar at the business, feed the kids, and send them through all of that university that has broken the bank for you.
I'm still trying to get out of that.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah, you don't get out of that.
So, just to kick it off, I mean, one of the biggest things that or one of the biggest confusions, I guess I would say, is that people are always saying, what is Islam and what is Muslim? And what's the difference?
Is that a question to me?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, it's very hard to define Islam, I guess, in a sentence, you know. Generally, it says Islam is a religion, and practicing it is a complete submission to the will of God. You follow all the rules and regulations laid out in the Quran and the Hadith, and you follow it to the best that you can in your life, you know. And there's certainly a lot of guidelines and step by step that a Muslim goes through in his everyday life. So it's really hard to summarize, but other than the fact that the religion itself involves just about every aspect of life, you know, and to some extent some have values, political, economic, and spiritual life of their followers.
Wonderful. And as I understand it, and as I said beforehand, if I stick my foot in it, I'm learning very, very slowly, unfortunately, but I'm trying real hard to learn, and I've done a lot of research on the topic, and, you know, so basically Islam is, as I understand it, generally denotes the religion or the community, and Muslim denotes the person?
Islam is the religion, and a Muslim is a person who follows the religion of Islam.
Perfect. Okay. See, and that was so confusing for me before I started this research. And it's like everybody was crossing those over for me and using them as now I understand it in the wrong context.
Well, it goes really hand in hand. To be Muslim, you're follow Islamic law, rule, and religion. It goes hand in hand together.
So it's kind of like Christianity and Christian.
Yes.
There you go.
Except two words. You know me in language. Two words is too much for me. You make fun of me all the time for it.
Sorry.
So, you know, and I'm printing out stuff off of the net, and I'm looking at stuff everywhere. And the bigotry, every single time there's an article anywhere about Muslims or Islam, the brutal comments that come out at the end of every article bring tears to my eyes. The ignorance that people are expressing in there. I mean, one example, I just printed out the difference between Islam and Muslim from differencebetween.net. And the first comment is, for example, a sentence would be, Islam is a region of terror, or all Muslims are terrorists. First comment that comes up, you know, and how does that make you feel as a person who's always facing this negativity and harassment and, well, ignorance?
Well, first of all, I guess you don't go to the internet really to find out about Islam, you know, or a Muslim. I think that's probably the first strong approach, because there is so many information there. It's very, really hard to distinguish the facts from, all the stories that have been floating in the net, especially any time something happens in the Islamic world, either here in North America or in the Middle East. There's all kind of stories. I've read a lot of books that just, you think the person doesn't even know what they're talking about. So my suggestion is to really understand Islam, a person should make an effort to talk to one, you know, in your community, in your neighborhood, or walk to the church, to the mosque, you know, anywhere. We have a lot of them here in London. You just walk in there and ask the questions. It's simple. We are open. We are accommodating. You know, we are ready to talk. We are ready to educate. We are ready to answer any questions. I'm pretty sure any Muslim in this day and age would be glad to do that. So I would say the internet is the wrong place to find out about religion. And there are some information there that are authentic. There are websites there that do give an objective information about the religion and a Muslim. But I would say make an effort to either read a book or, you know, talk to a person. That would be my...
And that's what we're doing today, is
perfect.
We're talking to a person.
Perfect.
And I agree with you, Adam. The London Mosque on Oxford Street West, Iman Jamal Talib, is a really good person. He's very open to anybody going to talk to him or giving him a call.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful. And you know, I've heard that. And I really encourage people to, you know, when you talk about any phobia, whether it's Islamophobia, whether it's homophobia, transphobia, biphobia, acnophobia, you know, any phobia that's out there. I'm deathly afraid of spiders. But that one's always in there. But I should learn more about spiders, but I just step on them.
We'll have to do a show on that.
I'm a bad person. As soon as I can get a spider to come to talk to me, I'm going to have them on air.
There you go.
But
communication.
Yeah, communication's key, and education is key, and actually talking to people and understanding the person that you're talking to and understanding that there's different viewpoints in different people.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, as I see it, Islam is very much like every other faith-based religion out there. It's very much open to interpretation. And 2 weeks of delving into the internet to learn about Islam, I can tell you that it is by far not the best place to go and get any kind of factual information. I have never had a show that I've wanted to prep for, like this one, that I have had to do so much work delving through the misinformation, the misguided information, the sensationalistic information, the extremist information, Mark Steyn himself has, 2,000 YouTube videos condemning Islam on the internet? And, I mean, he's just one loudmouth reporter from Maclean's in Canada. I mean, and he's got all of that space taken up.
Yeah, well, in these days of what they call information overload, right? You know, they just, everybody got what they call 24-hour channels on TV. They all have to be filled with something, and that tend to kind of create kind of, I think, in some cases, lack of verification of facts that are aired or printed, you know. And Muslims have kind of learned to adapt to that. You know, we try very hard to live our life, you know, the way we should, by example, and do the best that we can in whatever community that we find ourselves in. But that's really the best you can do. You can't stop this information from going around. You can't stop people from saying what they want to say because we are in Canada, you know. We have freedom of information. Anybody can open their mouth and say what they think. And that's perhaps, our strengths and sometimes maybe our weakness too, right? So that's the way it is, you know. You just take it one step at a time.
Well, I will correct that actually Canada does not have freedom of speech. That's our American partners down south that have that First Amendment right that trumps all in their country. But actually in this country, we don't have that.
Well, we are free to say, our minds, without fear or a repercussion from authority or otherwise. So to me, that is fairly, freedom.
It is. And in your backyard, you can say anything you want in Canada, and there's no one that's going to say anything about it.
There you go.
It's just when you own a business that, or you're providing a service, or you're a government agency, or you're responsible to the public, whereby you're not allowed to just say anything you want. Me as a radio host, I can't just say whatever I want. I mean, they'll take the radio station off the air.
So, Adam, how long have you been in Canada?
I've been in Canada since 1978. So I went to school here. I'm from originally from Nigeria, northern Nigeria. I moved to London, I think it's 1985, and have been here ever since.
So when you came to live in Canada, how did you find that different from your country that you came from?
Well, besides the immediate shock of the weather.
Snow, yeah.
Yeah, I like it because I read about Canada. A lot of my high school teachers were Canadians, and I've always kind of dream about coming to Canada. So when the opportunity comes for me to come here and study, I really took it and I came in. And yes, from the beginning it was a bit of a trial, but I learned to adjust, and I'm happy I did. And here, 32 years later, I'm still here.
So you didn't find that you had any problems with people with discrimination and stuff like that when you came here?
Now, it's hard to generalize, you know. Definitely, there are some people who have different opinions, you know, about other people. But for most part, I can't, if it happens, it's not something that I let myself be affected by it. So, yes, there is some people who have opinion differ from, I like to say, majority of the Canadian people. But that, to me, is not a reason not to try and not to do things, not to go out and kind of be part of the community, you know. So you really have to kind of, you know, have that kind of attitude.
Mm, great, yeah.
Well, one of the things, and listeners, I know that this is a very, very vocal topic for people, and this is CHRW, and at any time you want to call in to the radio station, the number is 519-661-3600, and we'll do our best to get you on the line if you do want to pipe in on this. But Adam, so I never realized that you were fresh in Canada when I met you.
Yeah.
That just dawned on me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm a real perceptive girl.
Yeah.
So you basically dropped into Canada and opened a print shop.
Well, you know, first I went to school.
Yeah.
And then and I did go back home and do some service, and my wife also went back to Nigeria with me just to see my family. My wife is a Canadian. So we came back there and we decided to start a family. We used to live in Sudbury before we moved to London, and when we moved to London, we found out this is a good place to raise a family. And we've raised 4 kids here. Mm-hmm. So and it's wonderful.
And you raised them in French immersion.
That's right. Everybody in my household speaks French and English, perhaps except me.
And all the boys are almost grown up now.
Yeah, and my youngest is 14. My oldest is 24, and I have a 22, and then a 17-year-old.
And all 4 boys.
All 4 boys.
Trying to steal my daughter.
It's the zoo in my house sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Poor Bonnie.
Yeah.
So, if you had the opportunity, which I've just given you,
mm-hmm.
to say to everybody about yourself, what would be the one thing that you would want to tell people?
Well, you mean myself as a Muslim or myself as just a member of community here in London?
Oh, well, let's go with Muslim.
Really, like, in my situation, I can say I have not experienced anything that I can say is attributed to my religion in the community that I live in. That's not to say there is not one, you know, but keep in mind, and an African-Canadian, you know, most people that these days have those kind of experience are people of Middle Eastern origin, because they, you know, there is a stereotype right there, right? So I, in somehow kind of, even though I'm a visible minority, but I am kind of a different class of minority in terms of the religious life. So, all I think people should, and I think for most part Canadians are, and especially, you know, my experience in London here has been the same. People are always open to people of variety. I mean, we have a multiculturalism here in Canada. So obviously, a lot of people are open to know the idea. You know, I mean, yeah, they're a little bit worried. They're very reserved, but once you actually get to communicate with people, sit down and talk to them, they know that you're just an average person who is just trying to make a living, you know, live their lives, you know, just the way everybody wanted to do when they're here. So for most part, I think the communication, I see, if you, like I say, ask questions, you know, approach your neighbor if you're a Muslim, maybe you feel like they're not, you know, opening up to you, talk to them. That's talk. You know, I always tell my kids, my friends, the best way to dissipate any kind of misunderstanding is to communicate, right? You know, just go out there and talk, and if you have a question, ask.
Always good advice. So, you, when you and I first met way back when and we got to know each other, we had stores side by side and started doing business together and everything else, you started signing your emails to me, my token black friend. Do you remember that?
Yes, that's for sure. Oh,
I will never forget that. It's like, actually, no, you're not my only black friend, but...
That was way back then.
Oh, that was way back then. But I will never forget that. And that always opened the conversation between you and I. And we always could honestly talk to each other about everything that was going on in our lives. And you know, I think I've probably had more things go on in my life as far as marginalization goes. You know, I've... Every time you turn around, I've got a different identity and a different label attached to me. So, Deb loves doing this show with me.
Yeah, I do, actually. It's quite informative.
Well, you know, this is between the margins, and mm-hmm. and I'm, like, on both margins, 1 foot on each.
Very brave.
Yeah, so one of the things that you mentioned is something that I really... really try and get across to people when they're using racial slurs about the Muslim community and everything else, and then I just used it wrong. But, and that is that not all Muslims are in the Middle East.
No.
And it's important to realize, too, that Muslims in the Middle East are not all terrorists either.
Absolutely.
That's very important.
Absolutely. And from my understanding over, you know, back in 1500 AD or whatever, when you know, the Islamic religion was in its infancy, as you know, my internet knowledge has taken me here, kind of it is got multiple sects within Islam. Is that the way it kind of... has unfolded, or?
Well, yeah, they are just like any other religions. I guess the most famous one are the Shiite and the Sunnis, you know, which, you know, that's the one that come to the surface. But just like any other religions, there is usually sometime a sect that follow a certain way and live it according to what they believe that the Quran or the Hadith teaches, right? You know, and that's, you know, very common, just like the Christian religion, right? So, yes, there are sects. I am not too sure where I can definitely say when this starts, you know, probably right from the death of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, right, that, you know, there's always going to be disagreement, you know, because when the leader who has the ultimate authority to say this is it or this is not, then it kind of, that situation lends itself to different interpretation of, you know, what is in the book, right? So probably that's when it started. I can't tell you exactly at what time and how many sects, for example, today exist, but there definitely are several.
And these stereotypes, they're not accurate. I mean, there are some, as in all stereotypes. I mean, people say that a gay man is flamboyant, flamey, and all fluttery everywhere, and my hands are going all over the place everywhere. But, you know, and yeah, there are some people that fit in that stereotype. But, I mean, there's millions and millions of Muslim people in the world.
Oh, billions.
Billions, yeah. It's like 1/4 of the world's population is now follows Islam.
Absolutely.
Yes, so, you know, really you're the majority.
Yeah, and it's interesting now that there are more Muslims outside the Middle East than there are in the Middle East. So all this stereotyping about the Middle East is really, you know, almost really a misunderstanding of what Islam is. It's what every continent, every country, in the world, you know, you find a Muslim population living in the community, doing their own thing, contributing in their own way, in a very, you know, effective way, in a way that in science, in medicine, in all kind of aspect of life, you know, where a lot the Muslims have this drive to learn, you know, to be educated, to be to excel in really anything that they do, right? You know, that's just something that's almost ingrown in, I don't know whether it's from the religion or it's just the whole religion is about learning, you know, it's never stop learning. And in order to learn, you have to open yourself to other, views, other options there, in terms of you may agree or disagree with it, but the whole essence of life of a Muslim is really to continuous learning, is you never stop. You know, you constantly learn about your environment, about your community, about your religion, yourself, you know, and about other religions for that matter. So that way you can kind of communicate and relate to other people. Right?
And family is a...
And family, definitely.
Huge part.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know too many more dedicated fathers than yourself. Every single time I'm over to your house, and you're always... attentive, and you know the love is beaming out of you, and you can just see it in your face every time I talk about your family. Mm-hmm. Even though you did try to steal my daughter, but
yeah, that's one thing we are not blessed with, a daughter, and then we have four boys, and any time we see somebody with a daughter, we kind of in a way feel that we're grateful for what we have, but I always feel sorry for my wife because she's the only woman in the house, so it would be nice to have a second opinion. She's always looking for a female angle to the family.
Yeah, and she can always go out and find that. Escape. Well, we're going to be back after these few commercial breaks, and we'll continue talking with Adam Garba.
We are all in this.
We're back, and I'm Michelle Boyce.
I'm Devil Hamza.
And I'm Adam Garbo.
And we're talking about Islamophobia here on Between the Margins on CHRW. So we're back, and we're talking with Adam Garba, who's a businessman here in London and owns A&B Print out on Meadowbrook Road, where him and his wife Bonnie and... do all of the printing here in the city. You've got it all pretty much locked up now, don't you?
We wish.
But that's where we met a long time ago. We got a slight clip here. It's called This Is Me. And hopefully they've got that queued up in the booth.
Me.
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 This is what it's like
to be me.
To be me.
This is what it's like to be me.
Hi. I'm not a terrorist or a date merchant. I don't live in a tent or keep my wife zipped up in it all day. And for the record, I knew who she was before I married her, too. I have more than just white robes and sandals in my closet, and I've never actually rode a camel before. Ever. Even though I'm sure they're great animals and all. I do know someone named Ahmed, but it's not the guy from your economics class, so stop asking. Falafel actually is not my favorite type of food. I don't know how to even tie a turban, and I've never worked at a gas station or driven a taxi cab. And I don't think you're an infidel either. I believe in peace. I believe in people of all different religions and beliefs living together in harmony, like the early Islamic, Arab, Ottoman, and Spanish empires. And trust me, I would go back to my own country, but I'm already in it.
Muslims were the people who created some of the world's most beautiful architecture, reinvented algebra, calligraphy, astronomy, geometry, and the modern numerical system. Not the Greeks, but Muslims. And you know what? It's pronounced Islam. Not Islam, but Islam. And a real man fasts. A real man fasts and isn't afraid to pray wide open in the mall, regardless of the looks people are giving him. And he doesn't get nervous about washing his feet in a public restroom sink. And yes, that is the Quran I'm reading. I don't care if I'm in an airport, because it's the greatest book ever. My name is Muhammad, and I am a Muslim.
And that pretty much sums up those stereotypes, doesn't it, in a nutshell.
Yeah, he said it all.
Ann Coulter, I hate to even say her name on the air, but when she was here at the University of Western Ontario speaking, a brave young woman stood up and challenged her notion that Muslims shouldn't be allowed to fly. And when she asked Ann how she should then travel, and, you know, repeated that maybe she should take her camel. I haven't seen too many of those hooked up here at the racks, bike racks at Western, so I can't say that that's probably a major mode of travel here in North America.
Well, when I was in the Middle East in 2001 in Jordan and Lebanon, I don't even remember seeing a camel.
Yeah, stereotypes can be comical. Unfortunately, they can also hurt people. And I think that's the difference between Canada and the U.S., and whereby we don't have free speech, although the Free Speech Society is trying to bring that in as a right here in Canada. But in Canada, we're a lot nicer than that. We try as a group of people not to say things that hurt other people. And, you know, I think personally that that's a beautiful thing about Canada, is that the majority of the people generally do their best not to utter words that hurt other people.
Well, Canadians are known across the world, you know, for their accommodation of different cultures, for their acceptance, for their openness, you know. And perhaps that's probably why a lot of people aspire to come here, like myself. You know, I heard so much about the countries through my teachers. I studied, I had an opportunity to go to really about 3 or 4 different countries, still, in fact, and the Canadian permission was the last one to come in the form of visa, and that's the one that I took, because I think it's a great country. I'm glad to be here. I'm a Canadian. So, yeah, we have a lot to be proud of, and definitely if you give me an option to live anywhere else in the world, I probably will choose Canada 10 times over. That's for sure.
Well, it is a great place to live, and we had the immigration show, which you can pick up at betweenthemargins.ca, where we had a Toronto lawyer on talking about all of the difficulties that it takes to actually come into this country.
A lot of difficulties.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's another misnomer that Canadians have, is they actually think it's easy to get here.
Certainly not.
I mean, there's the point system that you can come in under, which you have to have 67 points, which include points for fluency in English, points for family connections, institutional connections, job connections. You get points for being in a age group that, you know, is productive within Canada. You lose points if you're older or younger. There's all of these factors. There's your education, your experiences, what you're going to bring to Canada, and you know, you have to be a certain kind of person that's going to produce in Canada to get here. And people think it's easy.
And it's not easy, and I don't know if people realize, but Damascus, Syria immigration office looks after most of the Middle East. And they are very tough cookies. They give people a lot of hard time when they come there. They delay their applications for a couple of years, sometimes 2 to 5 years. So it's very, very difficult to come here to Canada from the Middle East.
And that goes the same. I mean, I can only speak from the African part, you know. And if it is difficult from the Middle East, probably even more difficult from Africa, where the educational level is not as high as perhaps most of the countries in the Middle East. So, yeah, it's worth it when you get here, but it's definitely not easy getting into Canada because the screening regulations are very strict.
All of the different stereotypes that come into that, and one of those I think that we'd be remiss not to mention is women's rights. I mean, there was just a national article about Islam and how to beat your wife and, you know, the decision that just came down in Sharia courts that, you know, a man abused his wife because he left marks. And, you know, you've probably seen the media on that and probably felt the repercussions of that. As far as I can see, and everything that I can see in Islam, this isn't actually a part of the religion.
Yeah, well, you know, to that effect, I can really talk with my own, you know, life, you know, and my own upbringing. I have never, I came to Canada when I was in my 20s, you know, born and raised in northern Nigeria, and I've never seen my father beat my wife, my mother, or my sisters. I've never seen all those things that you hear now in the news. All those negative publications and coverage that you see on TV. So, from my point of view, yes. Some of this stuff I've been told. You know, I'm not an expert in this area. A lot of it's kind of religion mixed with culture and that kind of somehow kind of immerse the actual principle of the religion itself, you know. And these things varies from place to place, from country to country. Wherever you go, those kind of interpretations of women's status, children, and it all varies from country to country. So I think a lot of it is perhaps misunderstanding of the concept, the religion itself, and a lot of it is cultural influence in the area that this particular thing is happening. Again, you know, not an expert, but I can only speak from where I came from. I have never in my all 25 years there before I came to Canada, and even and I go back home on a regular basis, I go back almost every 2 years, I've never seen stoning or beating or all those things that you hear about in you know, in the news. That's not to say it doesn't happen somewhere else, but for me personally, I've never experienced it.
What I know from Imam Jamal in London here is that the Islamic view that domestic violence, any violence in the relationship, is not acceptable.
Absolutely.
It's not acceptable. And thinking about when I went to Jordan back in 2001, there was an incident that happened that week that I was there that a brother had killed his sister on the street. It's called a mercy killing. So that's the only kind of violence that I see in the Muslim world. And it's not right, that kind of violence against women. But the Islamic perspective is that violence is not acceptable in relationships.
In any shape or form, though, for sure, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, as I understand it, the Quran says treat the wife in a kind and good manner.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think that says it all in a nutshell, right? And where do you think this comes from? I mean, domestic violence and spousal abuse is a worldwide problem. I mean, the devaluation of women, the UN has declared as their most challenging occupation. around the world is this violence against women piece, and they've put it at the top of their mandate as a worldwide issue. So it's not a Muslim issue.
Mm-mm.
In any way, shape, or form. There's verses in the Christian Bible that are quite stoning and negative against women. I mean, it's seen across the board within religion and religious faiths, and I don't know why that kind of stuff is in there, because it's not in keeping with the faith themselves. And I think Pastor Cusick, a couple of shows ago, said it best when he was talking about the truth about God. And he talked about the Bible being a story and the telling of accurate facts as they occurred, not authorizing or putting the stamp of God on every word that's in the Bible. I mean, God has, as Peter puts it, his messages that he wants to convey, and the rest of the Bible is an accurate telling of the times. Is that kind of the same thing with the Quran, or is it different?
Well, I couldn't tell you for sure, but all I know is during the Prophet himself was considered a revolutionary when he came in and changed all the current practices of his time. And he lived, sadly, in all his life, he's never showed this kind of lifestyle where, as a matter of fact, if you read about Islam, you know that his first employer was his wife, right? So the first gainful employment that he easily got was from a woman, right? And she trusted him and was her wealth, and he traded for her back and forth, and she kind of take him as a trustworthy person to the extent that she, you know, they ended up getting married, right? So the Prophet himself has full respect for women and children in all his life, but when, and the Quran itself, when you look at it, you know, from my understanding, from the limited, you know, I'm not a scholar by any stretch of imagination. So from my understanding, what I read and what I have been preached to, if you really understand the concept in which the stipulations and the regulations that comes from the Quran is not to be violent to women or degrade them or make them subjective to men. And if you understand, see, the Quran is perhaps not like the Bible. You know, the Quran was written during the life of the Prophet. You know, so this is actually, is not like the Bible where perhaps it was written after the life of Jesus. But this is current. And if you really take the time, and I know the Quran is very, it's not a very easy book to read, you know, it's not like other religious books. You really have to understand the concept in which it came to be, you know, for you to really understand what the Quran is saying, right? So those kind of practice and attitude and opinions, and you know, it's very hard to really trace them back to the actual intention of the religion itself. Somehow, you know, in the growth of the religion and the diversity of culture, because Islam is a universal religion, these things pop up, you know, and you need some really intellectual scholar to study those things and find out. And there are books there are articles written that perhaps explain to some extent those kind of happenings in the religion itself.
Wonderful. Can we play the clip about the hijab? Because
they say, oh, poor girl, you're so beautiful, you know. It's a shame that you cover up your beauty so. She just smiles and graciously responds reassuringly. This beauty that I have is just a simple part of me. This body that I have, no stranger has a right to see. These long clothes, the shawl I wear,
honesty. Faith is more essential than fashion. Wouldn't you agree, this hijab, this mark of piety, is an act of faith, a symbol for all the world to see, a simple cloth to preserve her dignity. So lift the veil from your heart to see the heart of purity. They tell her, girl, don't you know this is the West and you are free? You don't need to be oppressed, ashamed of your femininity. She just shakes her head and she speaks so assuredly. See the billboards and the magazines that line the checkout aisles, with their phony painted faces and their airbrushed smiles. Well, their sheer clothes and low-cut gowns, they are really not for me. You call it freedom, and I call it anarchy in this hijab. This mark of piety is an act of faith, a symbol for all the world to see, a simple cloth to preserve her dignity. So lift the veil from your heart to see the heart of purity. Lift the veil from your heart to see the heart of purity. Lift the veil from your heart and seek the heart of purity.
Well, here at Between the Margins, we don't want to shy away from the controversial topics in any way. And I wanted to bring this up because I think it is extremely blown out of proportion as a whole concept. I mean, modesty is something that women have practiced since the beginning of time. And I mean, quite frankly, many of my non-Muslim girlfriends would love the opportunity to put on a hijab and be modest in that way. And so what's your feelings on the way that that stereotype has been blown up out of proportion?
I guess what is, for me personally, what I think is kind of skewed is the fact that most people who object to women wearing hijab are thinking that they are forced into doing it, right? You know, and so presuming that women do not have a mind of their own, they can't think for themselves, so they're basically subject to whatever they're told to do, you know. And it's amazing, you go to schools right now. Today on my way to work, I saw a girl, a little girl. She's probably about maybe, you know, 11, 12, and she's a crossing guard at a public school, and she was wearing hijab, you know. And there was just nothing, you know. She's fine. All the other girls in school are not wearing it, but she's quite comfortable, and she's just smiling and jumping and, you know, having fun with the other kids just like anybody else. So I think what they need to understand is probably to just give the women a credit, the fact that, okay, they do have a mind. They can think for themselves. Is there a point where, yeah, it can be taken to the extreme? Like, if you look at what's happening, perhaps the Taliban issue and in some parts of Iran, Iraq area. So there is a gray area, which I'm not really at liberty to, like, I'm not an expert to say why there, but for most part, those things happen out of, like, like their tapes say, modesty, you know, like people just don't want to, you know, show themselves, you know, so you'd be taken more seriously for what you are rather than and what you look like, kind of thing, right?
So just wrapping up this part of the show, and we're running out of time, and I think that pretty much sums it up. You know, girls and women have a brain. Just because they're wearing hijab does not mean that they're in an abusive relationship. That is the way they wish to practice, and that's what they're comfortable with. And, I mean, abuse is abuse, and it happens within every sect of the population. And I mean, the Muslim community does not get to get a jail-free card on that one, unfortunately.
I know that Iman Jamal is working very, very hard with the Muslim population here in London against domestic violence. He's not in agreement with that whatsoever. And I know there is cases here in London that he's trying to work with them to, you know, to make it stop, definitely. But there's not a lot of resources that I've noticed in London here for Muslim families, because a lot of them speak Arabic. There's not a lot of services in London, social service agencies that help them. I just wanted to mention a couple. There's a Muslim Resource Center. It's at 111 Waterloo. The executive director is Dr. Muhammad Bayabed. And that phone number for that, for any Muslim family or non-Muslim, he takes calls also from non-Muslim families, is 519-672-6000. And Iman Jamal Talib is at the London Muslim Mosque. He'll take calls anytime, 519-439-9451. And Dr. Munir Al-Qassim is at the Islamic Center of Southwestern Ontario on Palm Mills. And his number is 519-668-2269.
Great. And if you're running into domestic violence, all of the women's shelters are more than welcome places. There's My Sister's Place and Women's Community House and all of the other agencies, the Sexual Assault Center, both of them, the one at St. Joe's Hospital and the Sexual Assault Center on Dundas Street, are all available. All of those numbers are on the internet and in the phone book that you can use if you are experiencing domestic violence within any relationship, including if you're in a relationship within the Muslim community. But we're running out of time. Adam, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, I think I just like to encourage programs like this. I think it would be nice if perhaps, and I know some have, the mainstream media also pick up this kind of openness, you know, the ability to kind of involve people of different, you know, be it ethnic groups or religion or culture, to come in and kind of talk openly about issues like what we're talking about today. So this is a great opportunity, and thank you, Michelle, for giving me that opportunity to come in and do this here.
Thank you very much for coming out. Deb?
Yes, thank you very much, Adam. It was great to have you here.
That's all our time for today. Unfortunately, we're out today. Thank you very much, Adam, for coming in and talking to us. This show and all of the others you can find on the web at www.betweenthemargins.ca, and have yourself a healthy day.
Hey guys, are you stressed about school yet? It'll come. So if you're too busy to pick up your OSAP, head on over to the postal outlet and let them take care of it for you. Just make sure you bring your forms and ID and get them processed quickly. It's also a full-service postal office, so if there's anything you need to mail, you know where to go. The office is open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., so it's easy to find some time to head on over. The UCC Postal Outlet is run by Western students and is just another service brought to you by your University Students Council.
You're listening to CHRW, and I got your concert calendar for today, Monday, October 25th. And we start with Open Band Night with Shepherd's Pie at Norma Jean's. At Moon Over Marin Super Funky Mondays, doors open at 7 p.m. And at the Brass Door, the Rumble Bees. Playing at Western Film, we got Inception, playing at 7 p.m. This has been your concert calendar, and you're listening to CHRW.